5 inches of beauty.
Welcome back to another edition of Hammer the Over. Today is Saturday, August 26th. I'm Fred West. With me is Evan Drone. Evan, how are we doing?
Doing well, Fred. Ready for episode 3 here, getting to do a little fantasy content.
Yep, we've got some fantasy draft advice, some articles up on the website that you can check out before your draft or after your draft if you want to make some moves along the way. We've got an interview with one of our CEOs, Sam Walczak. Looking forward to that. But first, we're going to start off with some big news out of the NBA. Huge trade. Kyrie Irving going to Boston for Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Ante Zizic, and Brooklyn's 2018 first-round pick. What are your thoughts? Initial reaction?
That's a loaded haul coming back.
Yeah,
sure is. Cleveland's getting what they wanted. They're essentially setting up for the future if LeBron leaves.
Which he is.
Yes, he is gone next
We'll get
year.
To that.
We will get to that. But there is a holdup here. There's actually talk that Cleveland's considering, after Isaiah Thomas's physical yesterday, holding up this trade, which would be absolutely bananas if they put this right around and Kyrie's stuck in Cleveland.
Isaiah has to come back to Boston, who's trying to ship him. And his hip, obviously, if he doesn't get through the physical and the trade doesn't go through, then you're probably looking at a potential season-ending surgery on his hip too. So Boston could be getting back like no one.
This is like the first time I've ever actually seen a trade. You always see trade pending physical. This is one of the first times I've ever actually seen that come into play.
Yeah. See, I think if I had to guess, I'd say Cleveland may be trying to play a little hardball here, get an extra pick, maybe another prospect. I think if you're Cleveland and you're getting this kind of haul, and you don't necessarily need Isaiah Thomas right away, because you're going to walk through the East regardless, with or without Isaiah, you're making
it to
the playoffs.
LeBron's run point.
Right. It doesn't really matter. So, like, if his hip is not good to go for the start of the season, you can afford to let it heal, let him get back in time, February, in time for the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's not – I don't think it's like it should be a deal breaker for them, considering the haul that they're getting. But I think they might be trying to play a little hardball, get an extra pick.
Yeah, they're not going to get more anywhere else. So I think this is the right play, regardless of the hip. I don't see them flipping it, but that would be pretty wild if they did.
So if this goes through the way it is, let's say IT's healthy. Who wins this trade? Who you got winning this trade?
It's hard to say. I think long-term, it's obviously Cleveland. They're getting so much more back, especially with the idea that LeBron might be leaving and they're going to have to be starting fresh. Mm-hmm. I think they win that trade because, I mean, Boston's getting Kyrie on, what, he's got 2 years left on his deal. Pretty team-friendly contract, but he'll probably opt out and try to get some big money after that second year. But they're primed and ready to take the East now. Mm-hmm. I like Gordon and Kyrie and Horford. That's a pretty stellar big three right there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So you don't see generally like trades being made between the top two contenders in a conference.
Yeah.
So like it's basically Cleveland and Boston for the East right now. And they're swapping point guards.
That says something about how badly Cleveland was trying to get rid of Kyrie.
Right.
Thankfully, we got a haul back. But before we move on, I got a hot take here. I think LeBron and Kyrie are conspiring on this.
Okay.
They plan this together. So Kyrie knows LeBron's leaving next year.
Right.
These guys, they're smart guys. Uh-huh. I mean, Kyrie thinks he's a flat earther, so we got to take that into account. But
he's into conspiracies.
Guy. Kyrie knows LeBron's leaving. He wants to be the man, but he doesn't want to be in Cleveland. LeBron knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie leaves, which seems to be happening here. This opens the door even wider for LeBron to leave next year because all the pieces are falling around him. Cleveland's getting back what they need, security for the future with the picks. A few pretty solid players. I think they're in on this together.
So you're thinking that LeBron approached Kyrie, said, "Hey, I'm out after next year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get yours, go on." You think that they're conspiring to end up back together, or they're just conspiring to get out of Cleveland?
No, they're both getting out,
just out,
and they're trying to get the best of themselves.
I don't hate that. The other, I mean, I think LeBron's gone for sure.
Yeah, it's
gone. I mean, I. That takes a lot of planning on their part to actually. I mean, I could see if LeBron talked to Kyrie and was like, "Hey, I'm out after this year, like just so you know." And Kyrie was like, "Okay, then I'm out too."
Yeah,
that makes sense to me. Plus, like LeBron, who's petty as hell, hasn't seem to have any problem with Kyrie leaving.
Right.
Seems pretty supportive about it. So I don't hate
it. Neither of them is taking shots at each other, which I think is respectful, but there's something going on.
I don't hate that take. The other thing that LeBron has done to like kind of lay the groundwork for him eventually leaving Cleveland is this series of tweets on people burning NBA jerseys after they leave. Well, first, I'd like to first say, if you're burning an Isaiah Thomas jersey, you're a certified moron.
Yeah, you got to reevaluate your life.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was traded.
Literally, he had no say in this.
He wanted to stay. For all accounts say he wanted to stay in Boston, gets traded, you burn his jersey.
Gets you to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Everyone's saying, too, he plays in a game the day after his sister gets hit by a car and dies. Like, clearly, this guy had his heart out for Boston.
Yeah.
And you're burning his jersey.
Burning his jersey.
He got moved.
So LeBron comes out with this string of tweets basically saying, like, you know, like, the fact that fans are burning these jerseys for these guys that do, like, put it all on the court, and then when they leave to, you know, take care of themselves and their family, like, you have to respect that kind of business decision, which I actually agree with the sentiment behind that. Like, I don't really understand people getting, like, too attached to their players to the point where they, like feel slighted somehow by them leaving. But really the whole end game of this is LeBron laying the stage for him leaving next year.
Yeah,
and, like, listen, I gotta make the best decision for me. Like, we went over this last year. Can't be too mad because, you know, I did what I could for Cleveland, got the championship. I got to go to L.A. and win six more.
It's LeBron's world. We're living in it. He's got the control stick in the background.
Yeah. And as much as I agree with his original sentiment, if you're LeBron James and you leave your hometown twice, you can burn. You can burn the jersey.
Absolutely.
You can burn his house down. You can burn Akron to the ground.
The entire
city of Akron. Like, nobody cares. I've been there. It's a dump. It's fine to go ahead and burn Akron if LeBron leaves again.
Yeah.
Or when he does. So just pretty much pencil that into your schedules next summer. Moving away from the NBA, we've got some NFL talk. We're looking at the third preseason games here this weekend. Almost there.
Almost.
Almost there. Almost a story in Jacksonville was Blake Bortles losing the job to Chad Henne.
For about 24 hours.
And then somehow earned it back.
I want to know what happened.
Yeah, what happened. I think what they were thinking, it just doesn't matter who they put out there. Like, Chad Henne or Blake Bortles, like, the Jaguars are going to suck. Like, it just doesn't. They just hand the ball off to Fournette and just.
Yeah, ground and pound. It's going to be
all
a lot
that
of Fournette.
Like, it's hard to, like, imagine or think about someone recently who's fallen from grace so quickly and so hard as Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
Like, 2 years ago, he was a fantasy stud. It's the top, what, three pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And he just fell off the mat. He can't complete 15-yard passes. Those clips of him, like, underthrowing Robinson.
Yeah, on the sideline, and he's barking at him. Yeah, it's a disaster there. I don't know if things will ever look brighter in sunny Jacksonville.
Like, are they? They've never once been good.
I
can remember. Since, like, Mark Brunell was throwing, I don't think they've been good. Speaking of teams with terrible quarterbacks, DeShone Kizer named the starter for Cleveland. Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
What do you do with
him
now?
Fat contract right now. They're saying he might get traded. They're going to try to move him.
Like,
but who wants
it? Nah, Jets. He could probably play for the Jets. But, like, what's the point? Like, the Jets suck anyway. Like, adding Brock doesn't, get you from, like, 2 wins to 4 wins?
Yeah, I don't think he's got too bad of a life right now. I mean, he's getting that guaranteed money.
That's a snake until you make it situation right there for sure. He had,
you
like,
that.
He didn't even play well in
Houston.
In Denver.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He won some games with, like, the best defense in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And then didn't, like, basically crippled Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl
throwing
like,
ducks.
His left arm. And then, for some reason, Brock Osweiler gets an enormous contract because he's 6'9".
Good for him.
But, yeah, I don't know. Interesting to see guys. I love that move from Cleveland, though. I mean, like, who cares? Like, just put your young guy in, see what he can do.
Yeah.
I mean, could be throwing him to the wolves a little bit, but
I love this. I can't wait to see it. Maybe you've seen it already, but that picture of the Browns quarterback jersey.
Oh, yeah, another one.
Did
you even add Osweiler to that?
He had to make it. I don't know.
He didn't
start a game.
He might have to play in a game.
What warrants your name getting on that jersey?
I think you have to start a regular season game, but it's honestly, their best quarterback in the last, like, 10 years may have been Colt McCoy.
Bring him back. Where is he now?
Washington. I think he's still the backup to Cousins.
To Kirk.
Yeah.
Give him a call.
Also, speaking of preseason and the downsides of preseason, Julian Edelman goes down with what's almost 100% an ACL tear.
Yeah.
So you can rule him out for the season. I think it, like, the Patriots are, like, one of the few teams that can sustain these types of injuries. They'll like, they'll be fine. They've got Cooks and other, I mean.
Chris Hogan.
Yeah, Hogan.
He was a stud last year.
Yeah.
I think he can fill that void for Edelman.
Yeah.
You got Cooks running the sideline now. They're going to be fine.
You feel worse for Edelman than you do the Patriots. I mean, and you never feel bad for the Patriots, but, like, if you're a Patriots fan, you feel bad for Edelman. You don't panic at all.
These guys, they work so hard all offseason for it to all get thrown away in a preseason game like that, which leads into our next point.
Poses the question, 4 preseason games, is that too much?
I think so. I guess I'm not an elite NFL fan, but I don't care to watch it. And yeah, it's not just about the fans watching games, but that's too much football.
Yeah, the thing is, though, like, most of these preseason games are for your backups, your third strings, trying to get the roster down to 52 or 3 or whatever it is. And I mean, if you're a coach or, you know, a GM and you have players, you can play them as little as you want. If you want to make it a 1 preseason game for your starters, then you can. You have that option. No one says you got to throw them out there in the first and second game or the third even. Like, if Belichick didn't want to play – if he wanted a 2 preseason – like, 2 preseason games for Edelman, he could have just played them the first 2 and then sat him.
I can't even believe that Belichick plays starters at all.
I mean, like, yeah.
I feel like that'd be his kind of game. It's just.
So, I mean, like, I don't care if they wanted to move it down to 2. Like,
I think 2 or 3 would be good. I mean, 4 games is literally a quarter of an NFL season.
That's true.
That's a lot.
That is true. It is, yeah, when you consider, like, how it would be like playing 20 preseason games for the NHL or something.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's a ton of games.
Yeah, that's true. That is adding on an extra quarter. Speaking of preseason, we got the Vikes 3rd one this Sunday night. What are you looking for? This is where starters probably play a half.
Yeah, they call it the dress rehearsal game. Mm-hmm. Apparently Zimmer says that's not at all what this is, but that's just classic Zimmer.
Yeah.
One
eye.
Yeah, one eye. Eye patch Zim. I think the biggest thing, and everybody knows it, is just seeing if our offensive line can hold itself together.
Yeah.
Want to see Dalvin run the ball a bit.
Yep.
I think that's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. Is Latavius playing in this game?
I don't know. That's a great question. Where does he land on the depth chart even? Is he second or third?
I think he's 2. I think they said Dalvin is the
he's
one
the
right
guy.
Now. I think he probably comes into play in the red zone, goal line.
I think that's where he was in Oakland quite a bit. He had a lot of red zone carries.
Mm-hmm. And as the season goes on, I mean, I could see him taking, you know, first, second down snaps as well.
Yeah.
The thing with Dalvin that I like is it seems like they want him to be an integral part of the offense. Like, he's catching passes out of the backfield. He's carrying the ball. It seems like he's going to be
– I'm excited about
around.
That. This is what we – never had an AP, a guy who can play both sides.
Right.
And it's going to be refreshing. I'm so glad AP's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got out on AP at the right time. Like, obviously it didn't work out last year.
I just pray he doesn't run train on us on Monday Night Football week 1.
It's possible. And, I mean, like, AP's – again, he's one of those guys. He's a freak. He could – put up like 1,500 yards this year, and I would be like, yeah, I guess so.
That's AP.
Yeah, it's AP. But, like, I think he's probably pretty much done. Other big sporting event tonight.
Tonight's the night.
Money Mayweather, Conor McGregor. What are your thoughts? You have any thoughts? Do you care much?
I care. I'm going to watch it. I don't know where. I got to find somebody.
That's what I was thinking,
too. Penny up. But,
yeah. bum off someone else.
Yeah, I'll watch. I think it's just all a big show.
Yeah.
It's finally going to come to an end, which I'm okay with. I'd love to see McGregor knock him out.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
But
I doubt it.
Yeah, don't think it's going
to
happen.
I've got some thoughts on it later we'll get to in the betting section. Basically it's a spectacle, and it'll be interesting. It's one of those things that you want to watch.
Yeah.
You want to be there. You want to be able to, like, talk about it.
Yeah, you
want to
say you watched it.
Yeah, but
just,
like,
in case something happens.
It's very possible that this is just like McGregor chasing Mayweather around the ring for an hour and nothing happens. But it's interesting. I'd love to see a good knockout. I'd love to see McGregor just catch money in the face.
Grab
one.
I mean, this could be a revolutionary night for
Yeah, it could
boxing.
Kill boxing.
It could go one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, the thing is, it's like, there's not much to be gained for boxing. Like, they get more viewers for this.
Yeah.
Because they get the crossover with UFC and they
there's
get
much
the
more
McGregor.
To lose, that's for sure.
There's way more to lose. Like, if McGregor somehow wins this fight, boxing is what, dead?
It's over.
Yeah.
They just
bury them. They're done. Last quick segment before we get to our interview with Sam is first time we're doing this, it's I'd Rather Be Regular, and it's for me and Tiger Woods. For those of you who don't know,
this is our second one, right?
The I'd Rather Be Regular?
Yeah, we had,
oh, was it the second one?
Was it Ezekiel, our first
I'd Rather Be Regular? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, second I'd Rather
Be Regular. Punching that DJ?
Exactly. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Same idea, I'd Rather Be Regular. Tiger Woods had a tough week. He's had a tough, like, month, but
his couple years.
Yeah, that's true. Tough last decade, roughly. But nudes, never good when your nudes get released. Nope. Nudes of him and his ex-girlfriend Lindsey Vonn were released. Tiger was allegedly not very happy, threatening to sue anyone and everyone. This is a situation where I would rather be regular. So, not a big nudes guy in the first place, but if my nudes were to be released, I would... Well, they wouldn't be released, is the point. Is right. My nudes, nobody cares about my nudes. Nobody wants my nudes. If somehow it got hacked, or what, three people might see him and be like, oh, there's Fred's dong.
Well, it depends on what we're dealing with here, Fred.
That's true. But I can tell you right now, it wouldn't get too much further. So this is a situation where I would much rather be regular than be a famous person whose, schlong is on everyone's mind. And, I mean, Tiger Woods has, like, a famous... Like, it's someone that you'd want to, like, maybe, like, I can see you'd want to see. Because, I mean, he's got Tiger all these Woods. Sexual exploits. I mean, he's peeing on Hooters waitresses. Like, he's a guy that you'd want
He's an intriguing guy. Yeah. I mean, I haven't looked. I know there are guys out there that,
yeah,
just for the fact that it's Tiger Woods, they're like, all right, let's see what he's dealing with.
See what he's got.
See what this guy, I mean, he's a freak. He's a machine.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to have decent equipment down there, right?
Allegedly, that is the case. So now we're going to kick it on over to our interview with Sam Walczak, co-CEO of Model 284. All right, we'd now like to welcome on CEO of Model 284, my boss, Evan's boss, Sam Walczak. Sam, how we doing?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on. I'm a big, big fan of the podcast. Been listening since day one.
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Nice to have a listener here.
Yeah, we know we got one.
So, Sam, would you want to just give a quick background on maybe yourself, like what got you into the stats modeling business, your beginnings of Model 284, stuff like that?
Yeah, so I guess I was always a big, big sports guy growing up, you know, checking box scores in the paper before the internet was dominating everyone's life, and playing fantasy football and running for 1,500 yards in one game on Madden and all that good kid stuff. So I've always been kind of a big numbers guy, a big sports guy. I studied math and stats at St. Olaf. And so my senior year at St. Olaf, I did a research, well, quote-unquote research project with Professor Matt Ritchie, who's still teaching down there, great guy, really sharp dude. We did a project on trying to predict March Madness and using a model basically to advance teams in the tournament and then pick a winner. And that was kind of when I realized that I could use all this math and stats stuff that I'd been learning in school and apply it to something that I was passionate about in sports. Mm-hmm. Kind of a funny story. So the first year that I used that model was 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when
Shabazz.
Yeah, Evan's boy, Shabazz Napier,
Shabazz.
And UConn won the title as a 7 seed. And so I'm sitting there selection Sunday and like crunching all the numbers, and first thing I want to do is just run through the tournament and see what it says. So I fire the numbers away, and first team that spits out as champion is UConn, and they were like 100-1 to win the tournament at that point. And I'm like, all right, I screwed something up.
You were probably thinking, I'm done with my mind.
Yeah, there's something wrong with the data. So I frantically check all my work and it seems to be right. And so I'm, thinking about it a little more and convincing myself that UConn's going to win. And they were actually, they're ranked pretty high in the preseason. They kind of just underachieved all year. And they had
7 seed.
Correct. 7 seed, good guard play and talented team. But yeah, so that was definitely a fun ride to kind of kick things off. And
that'll get you going. Like, I might know what I'm doing here.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was fun. And then it's kind of just gone on from there. Met Mark at St. Olaf, and we kind of had similar interests
and nerded out
and eventually turned it into Model 284, and we've just been rolling with it.
Yeah, awesome. Glad you did. You're paying my bills. Model 284's got some interesting fantasy football stuff coming out, correct?
Yeah.
Do you want to just give a quick rundown of what's coming, what to expect, that
kind
of thing?
Yeah, so we're hopefully going to be hitting it hard this NFL season with a bunch of stuff. So we've got, I don't know, every week we'll be kind of producing weekly articles, and we're going to have stuff for models predicting win probabilities and lines and totals, so you can compare those to Vegas and see if there's spots where the models might like an over and under, or
that
want the Vikings to cover, all that sort of thing. So we'll have a weekly article kind of breaking all those numbers down. We'll have a couple fantasy-related models where it would be predicting quarterback scoring and defense scoring. So if you're, picking starters or looking for a quarterback to pick up or playing DFS, hopefully the models would be in that wheelhouse, and you can look at, who might be scoring more or less that week. And then we also have a fantasy points above expectation tool. We actually have one post out there on the website already. And so that is basically a different metric looking at points against in fantasy football. So if you're, on ESPN or Yahoo and you're looking at your lineup, you usually have the little red and green, 22nd next to each player, where it's trying to quantify how good the opponent is.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this fantasy points above expectation tool is doing is just taking a different view on that. So I at least some of the problems with that, 22nd, just the one number, is number one, so who did you play to get that? Did you play Tom Brady twice and Aaron Rodgers, or did you play
Kaiser?
Deshaun Kaiser. So doesn't take into account who you played. And then also stuff changes in the NFL. So if you think about the Vikings last year, their defense was one of the best we've ever seen the first six games, and then absolutely fell off a cliff. So if you're Vikings in week 16, should you be using numbers from back in week one when they're dominant?
Yeah.
Maybe not. So long story longer, this fantasy points above expectation, it just tries to take all that into account and give you a more accurate number. So the example I use in the article is, let's say the Vikings are playing the Lions in week six. Sam Bradford is averaging 15 points a game, and he scores 22 against the Lions. So the Lions' fantasy points above expectation for that game would be +7, because Bradford scored 7 points more than his average.
Right.
And so then you could do that number for all the Lions' other games and then get an average to that would be their fantasy points above expectation versus quarterbacks.
Mm.
And so then that if you have a zero, that would mean players are scoring exactly their average. And if you have positive numbers, players are scoring higher than average, negative, lower, et cetera. So that can account for who you played.
So every week, it's going to be more accurate every week with every game that
more data.
Right.
Yeah. So
we know that stuff.
Yeah. We'll be providing updated numbers for that every single week. And then let's see what else we got. We're going to have a kind of love-hate type article. It's still in the works, but some players that should be hot this week, cold this week, some more subjective stuff in addition to the hard model world.
The real numbers.
Real
exactly.
numbers.
Stuff
yeah.
that Fred and I have.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. The stuff that Evan and I kind of will take over. Like, we'll let you guys get started, and then we'll take
yeah,
it over.
Exactly, yeah.
Something interesting that I know you've been working on might appeal to my friends in the degenerate crowd, the gambling crowd. Situational factors article. Things that might contribute to different fantasy scores not fantasy scores, but some over-unders. Spread coverage. You care to elaborate on that? How someone like myself might want to use that?
Yeah, for sure. I
bet man like Fred.
Yeah, I eat this stuff up, so I'm with you there, Fred. I'm definitely in the degenerate crowd. So this model is gonna be coming out on or this article, sorry, is gonna be coming out on Monday. So
keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, when you're listening to this, it should be up there live, ready for you to look at. So essentially, I look at a bunch of situational factors in NFL games and see if the numbers support those factors making a difference in the outcome of the game. So like weather, for example, are colder games lower scoring? Do the overs hit more often in cold games? Or if the game is played in a dome, what do the numbers look like for that?
So you take into account like Vegas totals and such, and basically just looking for situations in which Vegas might be overselling or underselling.
Yeah, so more big picture, all the stuff I'm looking at in this article, so weather, indoor-outdoor stadiums, bye weeks, days of rest, divisional games, travel distance, what time the game is played at. All that stuff is stuff that's also accounted for in our NFL models and our ELO ratings, stuff that's going to be coming out that I already touched on. But in this article specifically, I'm just looking at, you know, what the splits might look like for games that fell into one category or the other. So like one example here for indoor games versus outdoor games, in the last, so 2002 to 2016, indoor games have an average total points scored of 46 and outdoor games are 43. So just, and then, but you look at that and the overs only hit 52% in indoor games versus 49% in outdoor games.
So Vegas has got that pretty much covered.
Exactly. So just looking at little nuggets like that and stuff you could take away and use for betting, use for targeting players in fantasy football, right, or DFS, whatever it might be.
The other thing that I was thinking is I just wanted to plug looking at your week-to-week kind of over-under, what you like, what you don't like kind of stuff, is that you guys did something like this for the NCAA tournament, correct?
Yeah.
And if I'm remembering correctly, that was probably my best run on the betting books.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good point. We're going to be doing the same stuff we did for the NCAA tournament and the NBA playoffs. And our numbers actually did really well against Vegas, specifically on over-unders. So March Madness, let me pull up the record here. I think for over, so what we're doing for that, so we've got a model that predicts total points scored, and then we've got another model that's completely separate that predicts the probability that a game goes over. So you get kind of two viewpoints of the same number, and when those two viewpoints are in strong agreement with each other, you'd say, I want to hammer the over.
Exactly. Hammer that over.
So for games that met that criteria in March Madness, for over-unders, our numbers were 15-6.
I like that.
So 71%. And then
guys should be salivating out there.
I know.
Number.
And we had the same thing for spreads. So a model producing a probability that a team covers, and then a separate model producing what the margin of victory is going to be. And then you compare that to Vegas. And those, so against all March Madness games, our numbers against the spread were 57% for that margin of victory model. And 64% for the over-under model.
So obviously the variables are going to be pretty different between NFL, NCAA, especially an NCAA tournament. How confident are you guys in your variables for the NFL week to week? I mean,
Yeah, so the NFL is tricky because it's such a smaller sample of games. You know, you only play 16 games in a year, where as an NBA and NCAA basketball, you get, you know, two, three, four times a bigger sample. So NFL is tricky, but I would say over the course of, you know, the entire year, I'm pretty confident in our numbers. I would say if you pick one game individually, you know, anything could happen. But if you get a good enough sample size, I would be pretty confident. And the other thing about the NFL is our data set that we're working with has a ton of games in it. So I think our data set, we have data going back to 1994. And we're not using that in every single model we have, but that's like 5,000 or 6,000 games. Mm. So it's a pretty big, you know, in the world of sports data, usually you're not working with a giant sample size, especially in NFL. So it's nice to have a bigger set that you're working with, which I would say gives more confidence to the numbers.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, definitely. If you're a fantasy player or you want to put some money on a Dolphins game at 3:00 on Sunday, take a look over at Model 284. Find what Sam and the guys have been working on. Use that information. I mean, I know I like to look around at like some similar stuff and see what some computer picks are making. So same idea.
Yeah.
The guys, they've got a proven track record. So make yourself some money. Do yourself a favor. Go check out Model 284 before you make any bets. Right now, though, we're going to keep Wally on, and we're just going to do some general fantasy talk. We know drafts are coming up soon. Maybe some have already happened in the works, but this week is a big draft week for fantasy football. So we're just going to quickly run through the top guys in ADP on ESPN and give our quick 2 cents on where we think guys are going. Pretty much general consensus, top two picks are going to be Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. You guys have a strong preference for either of those guys. I know I personally would be fine with either one. I've got an affinity for both. The last 2 years, I've had both of these guys. I had David Johnson last year. The year before, I had Le'Veon Bell. So they're both backs that are going to get a bunch of touches, both handing the ball off and catching out of the backfield. I think David Johnson had like 70 receptions last year, which is ridiculous.
He's a monster.
And both of those offenses, I mean, Arizona's runs completely through David Johnson right now. And then Le'Veon Bell is on the Pitt offense, which is just explosive. You guys have a preference either way?
I think you can't go wrong. Mm-hmm. If I'm, you know, I'm doing so many leagues that the way I kind of look at it is if I get the first or second pick in a draft, I'm just taking one of those guys mm-hmm. because, you know, over the course of all the leagues I'm doing, you're not getting the first or second pick that often. So just spread your exposure. And if I get first two picks, I'm definitely taking one of those guys. I think you can't go wrong.
How do you pick, though?
There's really data points on both sides that you can make an argument for each guy. So Pittsburgh's offense is definitely better. I mean, that's should be, you know, knock on wood, one of the best offenses in the league and high scoring offenses in the league. But at the same time, Le'Veon has a more significant injury history than David Johnson. I mean, he's missed some serious time. He's got his whole contract situation. He's gotten suspended before, and so you don't really know. David Johnson coming off of an injury himself. So I know I heard a point in another podcast this week where it's like, if David Johnson had gotten hurt 3 weeks earlier and missed more games, people are probably having a completely different discussion right now.
True.
It's just injuries are pretty random.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice thing about both of those guys, though, is, I mean, you can play it. It doesn't matter what, like, format you're playing in, whether it's standard or PPR. Like, those guys catch balls. They're your first two picks regardless. After those two, we've got kind of a – looks like a string of receivers in Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, and Odell Beckham Jr. I personally think Antonio Brown is the clear cut ahead of the other two just with – I mean, like, he's so consistent.
Yeah.
He's going to get, like, 1,300 receiving yards and, like, 8 touchdowns for sure. And with that offense, it's – I mean, I think he's a no-brainer at 3.
Yeah, I think he's been the PPR wide receiver 1 3 years in a row,
yeah.
Which is just insane. I love all those guys, too. Again, I don't think you can go wrong. Obviously, Odell got hurt recently,
yeah.
So you got to keep an eye on that. Julio, just an absolute monster. Probably the best combination of size and speed we've ever seen,
mm-hmm.
maybe.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm probably taking Antonio Brown there. We actually have, just to plug one more thing, we're doing these consistency rankings for mm-hmm. fantasy football. So we're looking at each player's last 30 games and how consistent they've been in scoring. And Odell actually comes out looking really good when you look at it that way. I think he has the highest floor and the best kind of floor ceiling combination. He's also been the most consistent of
mm-hmm.
those three. So you can definitely make the case for him too. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Ev?
I'm not sold on Odell, and that's totally on a feel. I don't love that Giants offense. I think maybe bringing Brandon Marshall in, putting him next to him could help. But I don't know. I personally stay away from him. I'd rather have Julio. But it also brings me down to Mike Evans. He's slated at number 8 right now, wide receiver 5. What do you think of Mike, especially bringing in DeSean Jackson? Is he in the conversation with those two?
I personally don't think so. I love Mike Evans, and I think he's an absolute freak athlete. I think that the thing you have to think about with Mike Evans, and I think people get carried away with just like the size and the speed and like what he like his ceiling is so high. You have to take into account who's throwing the ball. I like Jameis, but he still hasn't proven to be a consistent, like, top-tier NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they want to run the ball. That Buccaneers team wants to run the ball and play defense, and they're not necessarily going to be – obviously, he's going to get shots downfield. I mean, Jameis had a big arm. He's a huge target. But I just think consistency-wise, he's not in the Brown, Jones, Beckham. I actually would have him below Jordy Nelson as well.
Wow.
I'm with Fred here. I'm not the big Mike
Ooh.
Evans guy. I would take Jordy. I would take AJ Green.
Yeah, that's another guy,
maybe
too.
Maybe even take Michael Thomas over him. So,
okay.
You know, Fred already hit on some important points with him. Bucks want to run. Last year, literally everything broke right for Mike Evans. Mm-hmm. So Vincent Jackson gets hurt. He's just hauling in targets. And, you know, we all know touchdowns can be kind of random in football. And he just was on the right side of touchdown variance last year. I think last year was his, you know, absolute ceiling. And that's how he's being drafted right now. I think the chances he repeats that are pretty slim. Not to mention, like Fred said, they also brought in DeSean Jackson. And the other thing is he's had drop problems his entire career. Like, even last year where he had a ton of targets, he had one of the higher drop rates in the league, and that's been a problem for him going back to college. So, I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot working against him there.
I think I'm getting a bit of that hard knocks fever. Right?
Yeah, you might be.
I'm going, I mean,
you
for
see
my,
him go up for those balls, and it's just like...
Dude's a monster. Yeah. I like him. I'm drafting him. I'm taking him if I can get him for the right price.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the first round, I 100%. I like him there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if he...
It's all relative.
It's all,
right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't want to take him in the middle of the first. I don't want to take him at, like, six. I'd take him more in the like the 9 to 13 range, and it's, I think he's going to end up going higher. That's the issue. I think a lot of guys,
it's usually someone in your draft who,
yeah,
likes him more than you,
yeah,
do,
exactly.
So you don't end up exactly on,
yeah,
that same boat.
And I just think, like, if you're in the later parts of the first round, you're not going to see him anyway.
Yeah.
And I personally wouldn't take him in the beginning to middle part. One guy I wanted to talk about who I liked originally and am now going to start fading on is Shady. I love Shady, and I liked him at the beginning of the year, but the Bills are just, like, trying to lose. I mean, they ship away their Sammy Watkins, their best offensive, like, deep threat, and then Bolden retires, and, like, Tyrod Taylor, I guess, hasn't looked great, and it seems like the Bills are going to be a disaster on offense this year, and I just don't – I love Shady. I think he's probably, the third most talented running back, but I don't think he's going to be a great fantasy value this year.
Yeah, so Evan Silva, one of my favorite fantasy writers, he had a tweet a couple weeks ago that I thought just summed up the Bills perfectly. So he says, the Bills just traded their best cornerback and wide receiver, and then they just played LeSean McCoy for a full quarter in their second preseason game.
They're trying to lose, it seems like.
Yeah.
It's like they had a shot, and they just decided, wait, no, we don't actually want to win this year.
Yeah, I mean, they could trade him. They could trade Tyrod. They don't want to win. You know, he's gotten hurt before. I agree with you. I was high on him when the offseason started, but there's a lot of stuff working against him there.
Mm-hmm. So the top 10 on ESPN is pretty loaded with receivers. Obviously, you got, like we said, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, 1-2. And then after that, the next best is LeSean at 6. He's the RB3. So it's pretty top-heavy with running backs, it seems like, this year. Who do you target if you can't get one of those top two guys with your first-round pick?
I'm looking.
You can go right to receivers.
I my general thought process in the first two rounds is I like to get one of each. I mean, obviously, if the talent is just so off, like where like you can get like a Jordy Nelson and then like an AJ Green right away, like that's tough to pass up. Mm-hmm. But like the thing is, it's just you need that balance, in my opinion, to have a top tier running back and a top tier wide receiver. And there's more good wide receivers than there are running backs,
yeah,
like you said.
Definitely.
Like, there's more of that second tier good wide receivers that can get points than there are running backs. So I'm looking towards the – after that, I'm looking at Devontae Freeman I like. I like DeMarco Murray a lot, too.
I do, too.
Like, I think the Derrick Henry thing is pretty much over at this point.
Yeah.
He looks – in the preseason, he looked, like, slow and sluggish. And I think DeMarco Murray, I don't think you have to worry about, like, Henry stealing too many points off of him. And I like him a lot.
Yeah, I'm basically take if I don't have one of the first two picks and get Le'Veon or DJ, I'm taking receiver unless I get put in a position that absolutely forces me to take LeSean McCoy or Devonta Freeman or DeMarco Murray. I think at least my personal philosophy in the first couple rounds of the draft, I don't want to take someone who's going to just die and ruin my season. So I like taking guys who, number one, we already know that they're good.
Mm-hmm.
Like Antonio Brown, we know he's good. Julio, we know he's good.
AJ Green,
we know he's good. And I also like taking guys who hopefully shouldn't get hurt. So I think running backs inherently have a higher injury rate than receivers. So I tend to avoid them earlier on. But like I said, if you get put in a position where all top receivers are gone, sometimes you gotta divert.
The other guy, actually, I'll leave him for our sleeper picks. Your thoughts on quarterbacks and, and just how you go about drafting a quarterback.
Yeah, so I think in your average friends and family league, people are taking quarterbacks way too early.
Yep.
I mean, you'll get people taking Aaron Rodgers in the first round or Tom Brady in the second round, and then people who – and those same guys who took Aaron Rodgers in the first round are drafting Cam Newton in the seventh round.
Mm.
It's like just an absolute backward strategy, in my opinion. I think quarterback is so deep where you can find guys in any given week on the waiver wire who have a good matchup and do just fine. So in my opinion, unless someone falls to you and you can't avoid taking them, like Tom Brady in the sixth round or something like that, I'm waiting on quarterback.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I think that the quarterback rankings are like, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is the number one rated quarterback for a very good reason. Like, obviously he's going to be the most consistent, put up the most points, but I don't think he should be rated number one fantasy. I think that when you look at quarterbacks, you should be looking at value.
Right.
So like, obviously he's the best fantasy quarterback, but he's not the best value. I'm looking at guys like Kirk Cousins. I like him a lot. I mean, I even think, who was I looking at earlier this week? I mean, I don't really like Matt Ryan much.
Yeah.
I think he's got to come back down to earth.
Yeah, like in terms of value quarterbacks, again, it depends how your drafts plan out. If you're in one of those leagues where everyone's going crazy on quarterbacks, I might literally just wait until the last round. But if you're in more normal draft, I like those mid, you know, Cam Newton,
mm-hmm.
Kirk Cousins, Marcus Mariota. I like all those three guys a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
All right, should we jump into our sleeper
yeah.
and
lead us off?
Okay, so we're each going to go through some guys we like, dislike. My sleeper pick in a already pretty weak field of running backs, like we mentioned, Isaiah Crowell. A lot
mm-hmm.
of guys liking him this year.
Mm-hmm.
New offensive line in Cleveland, which obviously is a disaster as it is, but a lot of guys like him to bounce back. I think a lot of people were high on him last year, too, and he didn't quite get that breakout. A lot of questions at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we got DeShone Kizer starting this year, but I think there's going to be a lot of carries there for him, and I like him at that spot.
Yeah, I don't know. You must have missed it, because I just saw a report that Hugh Jackson's going to suit up and take Isaiah Crowell's job this year.
All right.
Honestly, they would probably win the same amount of games. There's no difference in the Browns' final record.
What if he just went off and broke the rushing record, like 3,000 yards, 40 touchdowns?
I love that. Sam, you got a sleeper for us?
So, bit of a homer pick here, but Steph Diggs.
Okay.
I think he is going to have an absolute monster year. Knock on wood, hope he stays healthy. He's obviously had problems with that. But I think, you know, the Vikings offense is pointing up. If their offensive line doesn't get decimated by injuries this year, Bradford should have some more time. I think Diggs, in, you know, small sample, he's shown that he has a ton of talent. And I think there's just a lot of boxes being checked for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking Diggs anywhere I can. I think you log into your draft, you take Diggs at 1.01, you log out and let
the
auto draft
take over.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people outside of Minnesotans think about Minnesota players that much, like drafting Minnesota players. There's just not a lot of, I don't know.
No, the only guy that you're probably drafting relatively high in terms of, or at least in relation to other players of his position, would be Rudolph.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Diggs is rated at 31 right now on ESPN for wide receivers. You can definitely, I mean, I don't know if you have to take him 101, but you can.
I think he's a huge
You could probably find him somewhere in like the middle rounds.
Yeah, for sure.
And that, I agree. I think he could be a 1-2 kind of guy. Mine, and I'm not sure how everyone feels about this, because this guy ruined people's teams last year with how high he was drafted and how poorly he performed. But I like Todd Gurley this year.
Yeah.
I like Todd Gurley. He's going to get the ball a bunch. I mean, yeah, LA sucks. He's gonna get the ball more than 20 times a game. I don't think he's gonna be as bad as last year, and I think you can get him towards the end of the second round this year. Like last year, he was going in the top five, top three. Like people were super high on him, thought he was gonna break records. I don't think that's who he is, but I think he's gonna have a better year, and I think you can get him for a decent value.
I don't know what to make of the Niners and the Rams, because you look at it on paper, and they should be just god-awful again. But they both bring in these coaches who are, you know, young hotshot coaches who I really like, and I
mm-hmm.
think they know what they're doing, so they should get better. I don't know how much better, but you know, if you talk yourself into that narrative, I can definitely see you giving Gurley some love.
Mm-hmm. I like where he's going, and I think he's going to have at least he's going to be a good. I think he'll be a one running back this year in fantasy, top 12 running back, and I think that you'll be able to get him towards the end of the second round.
Yeah, value pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jeff Fisher just
destroyed him.
Destroyed the entire Rams franchise.
Yeah.
So
more or less.
It can't be any worse, right?
No, it's not going to get worse. You got someone that's you don't like, someone going a little too high?
Yeah, I'm staying away from Gronk. I mean, I've had him on my team, I think, at least one of my teams the last 2-3 years, and when he's playing, it's like, it's just money. Love it. It's addicting watching him play and just get fed by Tom. But I'm staying away. Guy gets hurt too much every single year, it seems like. And he's just, I mean, he's dropped this year for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think you can get way more value out of a tight end for a lot less. Yeah. And I'm just not on that train.
So going back to what I was saying about my draft philosophy, I think he definitely he's a tough player because, number one, like I said, we know he's good, but also he is a big injury risk.
Mm-hmm.
So I always want to take him, but if I'm sticking to my guns, I probably shouldn't take him.
Yeah.
I think the thing about him, though, is people get so hung up on what happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
So Gronk's a great example of that because 3 years ago, he's coming off an ACL injury. He's a third-round pick. He finishes as a tight end one, doesn't get hurt. The next year, he's a first-round pick.
Yeah.
Last year he gets hurt, now he's a second round pick. Mm-hmm. Like, that shouldn't be changing that much, but people get hung up so much on what happened last year.
Yep.
That, like,
well,
I don't know.
The thing with Gronk is, like, depending on where and, like, when you take him, he can make or break your team because he's, like, that kind of talent when he's on the field, but he's also, he can't seem to stay healthy. So if you take him too high and he gets hurt, it could, I mean, really hurt your team. Obviously,
yeah.
If you draft well enough and you can bounce back from that. But if you get him, like, later on and he has a breakout year, I mean,
yeah.
He's the best tight end when
yeah.
he's healthy.
I think if you start with a safe, if you start with, like, an Antonio Brown or someone you feel really good about, I could definitely talk myself into Gronk in the second round. But, like, I agree with your point. He's risky. My bust this year, Julian Edelman. I think,
you mean his ACL bust?
I think he's not even going to catch a pass this year.
That's hot take of the week right there. Julian Edelman not catching a pass this entire year.
No, seriously, though, I think one guy who I'm probably not touching is Jordan Howard. So, you know,
Chicago.
That could come back to bite me. I think he could see a ton of volume. But, you know, he had a good stretch last year. Who knows how good he really is.
Yeah.
And that team is going to be just horrible. And they brought in a couple other running backs who could challenge him for some passing down work. There's already whispers of people taking some snaps away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going, you know, end of the first, start of the second round. So I'm never pulling the trigger on him.
You're talking Trubisky might get some carries back there. If
yeah,
fullback.
Yeah, fullback. Mitch in the 3-point. My fantasy overrated is a guy. I don't even know if he, like, because he's not going to be taken until later in the draft. But Derek Carr. I'm staying away from Derek Carr this year a couple of reasons. One, I don't know what to think about Derek Carr. I haven't seen enough Oakland games. I do like Oakland. I like the idea of Oakland being good. But first and foremost is he recently came out with I guess he's dropping an album. And the picture on the album has him with his, like, smoky eyes, his eyeliner eyes, and looking all dreamy into the camera. And you don't want that in your starting quarterback.
Take
can't
him off,
have
take
it.
Him off the draft board.
Do not pray. I just pray he's featuring Marshawn in that.
Yeah, featuring Marshawn with, like, just, like, a little
sell interlude. Records.
Yeah, no, stay away from Derek Carr. Can't have your quarterback singing on the side. Before we wrap up the interview, just any last draft advice out of you guys? Any tricks or tricks of the trade you like to employ?
I'd give a quick plug for auction drafts. I think those are the way to go. We were just talking. They can be a little bit more tricky, more stressful, a lot more variables going on. But you get more say in which players you have on your team. And you could take David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell if you wanted to. It's
yeah.
a lot more roster flexibility. If your league is toying with that idea, I would say go for it.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's definitely a fun way to make the draft a little more interesting. My one thing I'll say is if you're in a snake draft especially, pay attention to those runs of quarterbacks and tight ends towards the end of the draft, middle rounds. Generally speaking, once the like Matt Ryan start to go, everyone's taking a quarterback, so they don't want to be left out.
Yep.
And once like Jordan Reed's gone off the table, everyone freaks out about grabbing a tight end, and they tend to go quick. So if you're at the end of the line or the beginning of the line, you really got to decide if you want to be on the front end or the back end of those types of runs. If I'm going by what I want to do, I'm want the back end of the quarterback run, and I'd like the front end of the tight end run. But I mean, depends on how you want to run your team, and just pay attention to when those things start to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
Some other guys I like, just rapid fire here. I think Dalvin Cook has a big year. I think Sexy Rexy Burkhead, especially with who knows what happens in New England, but you can get him at the end of the draft. I like him. Terrell Pryor, I think worked out with Randy Moss this offseason.
High ceiling.
That's all you need to know. I think Doug Baldwin, underrated second round guy, solid guy, fits the bill of what I was describing earlier. Of he's proved he's a good player, doesn't get hurt. Pierre Garçon, going to catch a lot of passes in San Francisco. And then Austin Hooper, tight end for the Falcons.
Like it.
All right. Sam, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Definitely go check out Model 284's fantasy football and over-under spreads before you make any rash decisions. I'd like to thank Sam for that interview. One more plug, go check out Model 284 before you make any decisions on your gambling or fantasy draft or waiver wire moves. Last thing before we wrap up this episode, unfortunately we're not going to be calling Ewald. He had a rough night.
Yeah, Stella's got the best of him last night.
Give him the day off.
Yeah,
give him the day off.
He needs recovery.
But we're going to do the hammer the over of the week. I've got two overs, and then I've got a Fred's freebie for you, too.
All right.
First over, college football is back.
Finally back.
In a big way.
Woo.
With tonight. Unfortunately, you guys won't be able to get in on these with me, but just know I'll be riding them, and we'll keep my record going. We'll see how I do so that you guys can get in on the NFL picks. I've got the South Florida and San Jose State over at 71.
Wow.
71, and I love it. If you're not betting on this over, you hate fun.
This is like you get your paycheck on Friday,
yes,
and you cash that right out and
yes,
send it right to Vegas. This
South,
is an absolute
South
hammer.
Florida last year averaged 44 points a game and 512 yards, and they also allowed 32 points a game. This is a team that is basically not playing defense. And I couldn't love it anymore. You're going to see so many points. San Jose State was given up 35 points a game as well. So I have this game going over 80. I love it.
We're seeing triple digits.
We might see triple digits.
I love this.
It's going to be a fun one. You're not going to want to miss it. Other over I got, and I actually think this one is borderline free money, is Floyd Mayweather McGregor going over 9.5 rounds. I think the only way it goes under is if McGregor knocks him out, and I just don't see that happening. I don't think Floyd's got the punching like power right now. I don't think he's got the punch power to knock out McGregor.
There's gonna be a lot of dancing around.
Yeah,
I like that over.
Like, Floyd hasn't knocked someone out in 20 years. I like that over a lot. I think it goes the distance, which is why I'm giving you the Fred's freebie. As hammer this one is Mayweather, not or. not Mayweather inside the distance. So basically any other result besides Mayweather winning inside the distance at plus 133 right now.
Okay.
I love that. I don't see Mayweather winning inside the distance at all. I don't think that's even like a possibility. I think he goes 12 rounds. I mean, maybe death by 1,000 needles. He's just jabbing McGregor till he eventually falls over. I love this bet. And then this one also lets you root for McGregor too, because then you can root for that second round knockout by McGregor, still make your money. Basically, what I've been hearing, and I'm not like a boxing guy, but what I've been hearing is that McGregor's really only chance is to try to knock him out in the first three rounds, and
yeah,
Mayweather is obviously not a dumb boxer. He's aware of that. He's going to dance around, tire him out, and this thing goes the distance. Mayweather wins by decision, probably unanimous. You make your money easy.
Fred's freebie.
Fred's
love
freebie
it.
Of the week.
Take it. Run. Make
anything
money.
Else before we wrap up the episode 3?
I think that's all we got.
That's all we got. I hopefully we'll get another one out here with a football NFL preview here in the next week. Maybe rapid fire you guys with a couple episodes.
So, yeah, hopefully a little preview of the NFL season. Maybe a little touch on the Vikes.
Focus on the Vikes.
Get some Vikes rubes on for their hot takes this season. So, yeah, stay tuned.
Stay tuned. All right, thanks, guys.
Inches of beauty. Rap, rap, rap. Wow.